College English Test, Band 6, Part 2, Listening Comprehension.
Section A, Directions. In this section, you will hear 8 short conversations and 2 long conversations. At the end of each conversation, one or more questions will be asked about what was said. Both the conversation and the questions will be spoken only once. After each question, there will be a pause. During the pause, you must read the 4 choices marked A, B, C, and D, and decide which is the best answer. Then mark the corresponding letter on answer sheet 1, with a single line through the center. Now, let's begin with the 8 short conversations.
Question 1. What a wonderful performance! Your rock band has never sounded better.
Many thanks. I guess all those hours of practice in the past month are finally paying off.
What does the man mean?
Question 2. I can't decide what to do for my summer vacation. I either want to go on a bike tour of Europe or go diving in Mexico.
Well, we're offering an all-inclusive 2-week trip to Mexico for only $300.
What does the woman suggest the man do for his vacation?
Question 3. How long do you think this project might take?
I'd say about 3 months, but it could take longer if something unexpected happened. Maybe we'd better allow an extra month so we won't have to worry about being late.
Why does the man say extra time should be allowed for the project?
Question 4. I'm thinking about becoming a member here, and I'd like some information.
Sure. A 3-month membership costs $150, and that includes use of the weight room, sauna, and pool. I'll give you a free pass so that you can try out the facilities before you decide.
What do we learn from the conversation?
Question 5. I'm sorry to hear that you've failed the physics course, Ted.
Let's face it, I'm just not cut out to be a scientist.
What does the man mean?
Question 6. Gary insisted on buying the food for the picnic.
That's pretty generous of him, but shouldn't we at least offer to share the expenses? He has a big family to support.
What does the woman suggest they do?
Question 7. Did you see the headlines in the paper this morning?
Yeah. Apparently the bus company will be laying off its employees if they can't reach an agreement on wages by midnight.
What did the man read about? Question 8. Have we received payment for the overseas order we delivered last month?
Yes, the check came in yesterday afternoon. I'll be depositing it when I go to the bank today.
What is the woman concerned about?
Now you'll hear the two long conversations. Conversation 1.
Okay, that's it. Now we have to make a decision. We might as well do that now, don't you think?
Sure, let's see. First, we saw Frank Brzezinski. What did you think of him?
Well, he's certainly a very polite young man.
And very relaxed, too.
But his appearance...
He wasn't well-dressed. He wasn't even wearing a tie.
But he did have a nice voice. He'd sound good on the telephone.
True. And I thought he seemed very intelligent. He answered all our questions very well.
That's true. But dressing well is important. Well, let's think about the others. Now, what about Barbara Jones? She had a nice voice, too. She'd sound good on the telephone, and she was well-dressed, too.
She did look very neat, very nicely dressed. But
so shy. She wouldn't be very good at talking to people at the front desk.
Okay, now who was next? Ah, yes, David Wallace. I thought he was very good, had a lot of potential. What do you think?
He seemed like a very bright guy. He dressed very nicely, too. And he had a really nice appearance.
He seemed relaxed to me. The type of person people feel comfortable with right away.
He was polite, but also very friendly and relaxed, as you say. I think he'd be good with the guests at the front desk.
He had a very pleasant voice, too.
That's right. Okay, good. I guess we have our receptionist then, don't you?
Yes, I think so. We'll just offer the job to...
Questions 9 to 11 are based on the conversation you have just heard. Question 9. What are the speakers looking for? Question 10. What is Frank Brzezinski's weakness? Question 11. What do the speakers decide to do? Conversation 2. Hello?
Hello, is that the reference library?
Yes, can I help you?
I hope so. I rang earlier and asked for some information about Dennis Horton, the scientist. You asked me to ring back.
Oh, yes. I have found something.
Good. I've got a pencil and paper. Perhaps you could read out what it says.
Certainly. Horton, Dennis. Born, Darlington, 1836. Died, New York, 1920.
Yes, got that.
Inventor and physicist. The son of a farm worker, he was admitted to the University of London at the age of 15.
Yes.
He graduated at 17 with a first-class degree in physics and mathematics. All right?
Yes, all right.
He made his first notable achievement at the age of 18. It was a method of refrigeration which arose from his work in low-temperature physics. He became professor of mathematics at the University of Manchester at 24, where he remained for 12 years. During that time, he married one of his students, Natasha Willoughby.
Yes, go on.
Later, working together in London, they laid the foundations of modern physics by showing that normal laws of cause and effect do not apply at the level of subatomic particles. For this, he and his wife received the Nobel Prize for Physics in 1910 and did so again in 1912 for their work on very high-frequency radio waves. In his lifetime, Houghton patented 244 inventions. Do you want any more?
Yes. When did he go to America?
Let me see. In 1920, he went to teach in New York and died there suddenly after only 3 weeks. Still, he was a good age.
Yes, I suppose so. Well, thanks. Questions 12 to 15 are based on the conversation you have just heard. Question 12. What do we learn about Dennis Horton when he was 15? Question 13. What did Dennis Horton do at the age of 24? Question 14. For what were Dennis Horton and his wife awarded the Nobel Prize a second time? Question 15. Why did Dennis Horton go to New York?
Section B. Directions. In this section, you will hear three short passages. At the end of each passage, you will hear some questions. Both the passage and the questions will be spoken only once. After you hear a question, you must choose the best answer from the four choices marked A, B, C, and D. Then mark the corresponding letter on answer sheet 1 with a single line through the center.
Passage 1. In America, white-tailed deer are more numerous than ever before. So abundant, in fact, that they've become a suburban nuisance and a health hazard. Why can't the herd be thinned the old-fashioned way? The small community of North Haven on Long Island is home to some 600 to 700 deer. The Department of Environmental Conservation estimates the optimum population at 60. The town has been browsed bare of vegetation, except where gardens and shrubs are protected by high fences. Drivers routinely collide with deer, and there are so many dead bodies left by the side of the road that the town has made a deal with a local pet cemetery to collect and dispose of the bodies. Some people in the town have become ill from deer-transmitted diseases. On the occasions when hunting has been tried, local animal rights people have worked to secure court orders against the hunts, and when that has failed, they stalked the hunters, banging on pots and pans to alert the deer. Town meetings called to discuss the problem inevitably dissolved into confrontations. The activists believe, simply, that the deer are not the problem. Some communities have even discussed the possibility of bringing wolves back into the ecological mix. That means wolves in the suburbs of New York. It is almost too wonderful not to try it. The wolves would kill deer, of course. They would also terrorize and kill dogs and cats, which is not what the suburban dwellers have in mind.
Questions 16 to 18 are based on the passage you have just heard. Question 16. What do we learn about white-tailed deer in North Haven? Question 17. Why do local animal rights people bang on pots and pans? Question 18. What would happen if wolves were brought back into the ecological mix? Passage 2. And now, if you'll walk this way, ladies and gentlemen, the next room we're going to see is the room in which the family used to hold their formal dinner parties, and even occasionally entertain heads of state and royalty. However, they managed to keep this room friendly and intimate, and I think you'll agree it has a very informal atmosphere, quite unlike some grand houses you visit. The curtains were never drawn, even at night, so guests got a view of the lake and fountains outside, which were lit up at night, a very attractive sight. As you can see, ladies and gentlemen, the guests were seated very informally around this oval table, which would add to the relaxed atmosphere. The table dates from the 18th century and is made from Spanish oak. It's rather remarkable for the fact that although it's extremely big, it's supported by just 6 rather slim legs. However, it seems to have survived like that for 200 years, so it's probably going to last a bit longer. The chairs which go with the table are not a complete set. There were originally 6 of them. They are interesting for the fact that they are very plain and undecorated for the time, with only 1 plain central panel at the back and no armrests. I myself find them rather uncomfortable to sit in for very long, but people were used to more discomfort in the past. And now, ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to follow me into the great hall.
Questions 19 to 22 are based on the passage you have just heard. Question 19. What do we learn about the speaker? Question 20. What does the speaker say about the room they are visiting? Question 21. What is said about the oval table in the room? Question 22. What does the speaker say about the chairs? Passage 3. Janet James was 22 years old when she was diagnosed with MS, a disease that attacks the body's nerves. She had just graduated from college and gotten a job at an advertising agency when she began to sense that something strange was going on inside her body. When James realized how severe her illness was, she knew she had better hurry up and live life. MS is the biggest crippler of young adults, and although she didn't have many symptoms, she knew it was just a matter of time. First on her agenda was to pursue her dream of hosting a pop music program. She worked at a radio station for a year, always aware that her body was degenerating. Then her best friend moved away, and one night James began screaming, "I gotta go, I gotta go." 2 weeks later, she arrived in Alaska, thousands of miles from her friends, her family, and her past. "Everything fell into place," she recalls. "A 23-year-old girl with an incurable disease can fly to Alaska, and everything can work out." The MS attacks came and went, and most of the time they hardly slowed her down. James hiked, fished, learned to sail, and experimented with hot air ballooning. "I lived for adventure," she says. "Nobody ever had a better time or did more exotic, strange things than I did in an 8-year period." Inevitably, however, the day came when she was so weakened that she had to return to Pittsburgh, her hometown. There she began reliving her adventures by writing a book about them. Her book was published in 1993.
Questions 23 to 25 are based on the passage you have just heard. Question 23. What does the speaker say about MS? Question 24. What did Janet James decide to do after her disease was diagnosed? Question 25. What sort of person can we infer Janet James is? Section C, Directions. In this section, you will hear a passage three times. When the passage is read for the first time, you should listen carefully for its general idea. When the passage is read for the second time, you are required to fill in the blanks with the exact words you have just heard. Finally, when the passage is read for the third time, you should check what you have written. Now, listen to the passage.
It's difficult to estimate the number of youngsters involved in homeschooling, where children are not sent to school and receive their formal education from one or both parents. Legislation and court decisions have made it legally possible in most states for parents to educate their children at home, and each year more people take advantage of that opportunity. Some states require parents or a home tutor to meet teacher certification standards, and many require parents to complete legal forms to verify that their children are receiving instruction in state-approved curricula. Supporters of home education claim that it's less expensive and far more efficient than mass public education. Moreover, they cite several advantages: alleviation of school overcrowding, strengthened family relationships, lower dropout rates, the fact that students are allowed to learn at their own rate, increased motivation, higher standardized test scores, and reduced discipline problems. Critics of the homeschooling movement contend that it creates as many problems as it solves. They acknowledge that, in a few cases, homeschooling offers educational opportunities superior to those found in most public schools, but few parents can provide such educational advantages. Some parents who withdraw their children from the schools in favor of homeschooling have an inadequate educational background and insufficient formal training to provide a satisfactory education for their children. Typically, parents have fewer technological resources at their disposal than do schools. However, the relatively inexpensive computer technology that is readily available today is causing some to challenge the notion that homeschooling is in any way inferior to more highly structured classroom education.
Now the passage will be read again. It's difficult to estimate the number of youngsters involved in homeschooling, where children are not sent to school and receive their formal education from one or both parents. Legislation and court decisions have made it legally possible in most states for parents to educate their children at home, and each year more people take advantage of that opportunity. Some states require parents or a home tutor to meet teacher certification standards, and many require parents to complete legal forms to verify that their children are receiving instruction in state-approved curricula. Supporters of home education claim that it's less expensive and far more efficient than mass public education. Moreover, they cite several advantages: alleviation of school overcrowding, strengthened family relationships, lower dropout rates, the fact that students are allowed to learn at their own rate, increased motivation, higher standardized test scores, and reduced discipline problems. Critics of the homeschooling movement contend that it creates as many problems as it solves. They acknowledge that, in a few cases, homeschooling offers educational opportunities superior to those found in most public schools, but few parents can provide such educational advantages. Some parents who withdraw their children from the schools in favor of homeschooling have an inadequate educational background and insufficient formal training to provide a satisfactory education for their children. Typically, parents have fewer technological resources at their disposal than do schools. However, the relatively inexpensive computer technology that is readily available today is causing some to challenge the notion that homeschooling is in any way inferior to more highly structured classroom education.
Now the passage will be read for the third time. It's difficult to estimate the number of youngsters involved in homeschooling, where children are not sent to school and receive their formal education from one or both parents. Legislation and court decisions have made it legally possible in most states for parents to educate their children at home, and each year more people take advantage of that opportunity. Some states require parents or a home tutor to meet teacher certification standards, and many require parents to complete legal forms to verify that their children are receiving instruction in state-approved curricula. Supporters of home education claim that it's less expensive and far more efficient than mass public education. Moreover, they cite several advantages: alleviation of school overcrowding, strengthened family relationships, lower dropout rates, the fact that students are allowed to learn at their own rate, increased motivation, higher standardized test scores, and reduced discipline problems. Critics of the homeschooling movement contend that it creates as many problems as it solves. They acknowledge that, in a few cases, homeschooling offers educational opportunities superior to those found in most public schools, but few parents can provide such educational advantages. Some parents who withdraw their children from the schools in favor of homeschooling have an inadequate educational background and insufficient formal training to provide a satisfactory education for their children. Typically, parents have fewer technological resources at their disposal than do schools. However, the relatively inexpensive computer technology that is readily available today is causing some to challenge the notion that homeschooling is in any way inferior to more highly structured classroom education.
This is the end of listening comprehension.
听力考试结束，现在由监考员收答题卡一，请考生等待开始作答。